You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. This is episode 27, I believe, for Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. This is JJ Sefton with my co-host and good friend, CBD. CBD, how you doing out there?
I'm doing great. This lovely, lovely early summer morning. Actually, it's not quite summer yet. Weather's been great. Had a nice meal in Hoboken last night. So life is grand, except for, of course, for the fact that the entire world is going to shit. Everything is grand.
We are literally caving. Everything is caving in all at once. And, you know, and it's an absolute, you know, it's literally a nightmare happening right now with people's savings being wiped out. Credit card debt is going through the roof. Gasoline is going through the roof. We have stagflation. But of course, our wonderful president, Sponge Brain Shits Pants, otherwise known as Joe Biden, and his spokes idiot, Karine Jean-Pierre, are saying that no, everything is great. It's the greatest economy since forever. And it's just all you idiots who are bad mouthing it. That's really the problem. But politically, though, this is a disaster. And last night we had yet another group of primaries happening, and also a very, very important special election in Texas, right near the border. And things are really shaping up for, I mean, I know we have issues with Trump perhaps running as president at the top of the ticket, but for sure, people who are aligned at least with his agenda are winning and winning big, and this is very crucial.
I think that's an extremely important point because I've been thinking about this over the last few months, and business as usual after the midterms is going to be a very, very bad thing for America. And that's why people who, as you say, are aligned with President Trump need to win, and they need to win big. And the paradigm has to shift in the United States away from the GOP crap that we've been fed for the last two generations and toward people who are unabashedly pro-American, unabashedly anti-enemy. And when I say that, it sounds ridiculous. Oh, yes, we should be against our enemies. But the reality is that there is a strong majority in Washington right now who are very, very comfortable with countries that are working actively against the best interests of the United States. And until that ends, and the way it will end is, as you say, people who are allied with President Trump and his policies and his philosophy, until they win, we are still in big, big trouble because, as I said, business as usual in Washington is just more of the same.
Absolutely. And you know, we talk about enemies, foreign and domestic. I think our greatest enemy in this country right now is the Democrat left, progressive, socialist, whatever you want to call it, movement that has literally taken us to the brink of disaster and is going to, if it has its way, push us over the brink of disaster, both culturally, politically, societally, economically, you know, every which way until Sunday, so to speak, that they can possibly imagine in order to transform this country into something it was never intended to be. But getting back to the politics, there was one special election in to fill a vacant seat in South Texas. And for the first, I believe it was near the town of McAllen, which is right on the border of Mexico. And for the first time in 150 years, a Republican and a Latina Republican has been elected to fill that seat, at least temporarily until November, until the general election. And that is sending shockwaves really everywhere. From a political standpoint, as I said, 150 years to hold on to that seat. Suddenly it goes Republican in a district that's like, I believe it's well over 90% Latino. It sends a message. It sends a message that the Latino voter bloc, so to speak, is not to be taken for granted. And they do not and are not aligned with the cultural and economic and open borders policies of the Democrat Party. At least now they see them for what they are, as a danger and a threat to them as well as for the rest of the country. So this is, I think, big news going forward.
Well, once again, this is a clear signal that the best way to beat the Democrats is to shut up and let them fail. Every time the Republican Party steps in and tries to play nice or play tough with the Democrats, they lose. So I think that their only rational technique going forward is to just let them do what they're going to do, which is to destroy the country. And that is going to be the impetus for what is obviously shaping up to be a huge, huge midterm election in November. The Democrat policies are so unbelievably damaging to America that even the, how do I say this politely, you know, even the disinterested American who really doesn't care that much about politics, even though the, you know, the nightly news has this never-ending litany of horror shows like trannies dancing with six-year-olds and people openly critical of the United States. But when they see $6 gas, by the way, I saw $6 gas in New Jersey last night, which I thought was quite unpleasant. Anyway, when they see $6 gas and they see empty shelves and they see a brain-dead fool jabbering incessantly about how wonderful the economy is and aren't you just too stupid to realize it, that's when they become energized. And the most important thing is for the Republicans to just shut up and let them fail. And of course, McConnell, in his infinite wisdom, is ignoring that admonishment and playing nice with these red flag laws. But, well, anyway, let's get back to politics for the time being.
When you see $6 a gallon gas, whatever it is, wherever you are, the national average is now above $5 for the first time in history. When you see that, that hits everybody right in the wallet, unless you are a very, very wealthy person, or unless you're like that idiot Debbie Stabenow who says, well, just go buy an electric car and you won't have to worry about high gas prices.
That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Boy, did she step on it. That was just perfect.
And she's doubling down on it, by the way.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And the Republicans should just say more, please, more.
Right. The wiser of the Republican Party will let them say, just let them step on their you-know-whats and keep spouting the stuff off in the face of abject reality where it hits the average. You know, you can be disinterested in politics, but believe me, when Mr. Clinton said, it's the economy stupid. When politics is very interested in you, especially the economy, when your bank account is being drained, when you are paying $6 a gallon for gasoline or $5 or whatever it is around the country, there's no messaging this. There's no way of excusing this as Putin's fault, as anybody's fault, as Donald Trump's fault of all people. There's no way. This is squarely on their policies of literally destroying the fossil fuel industry because of green fairy tales and all that kind of climate change nonsense. But as far as politics go, I think I want to circle back to this. You know, we have to separate in a way Donald Trump from Donald Trump and Make America Great ism, you know, so to speak. I know we have our problems with Donald Trump running again. As much as I love him and I love what he did, we've kind of played this note before because he is too old. And I think and I kind of tend to agree with you and Michael Walsh, who we've had on the podcast a couple of times, is that I think his time personally as being the chief executive is over. But his policies, his America First policies, his wise foreign policy policies, his energy policies, his deregulation policies, all of these have to be at the forefront going forward. And obviously the biggest headwind we have of that outside of a bureaucracy that does not want to be dismantled is a Republican Party that does not want to move this agenda forward. So this news that Trump's backed candidates, if you separate again Trump from the man, from his policies and the people that he's backing, he's got a great record so far over the last several primary elections in that it's got to be. I think he's only lost one or two seats. I think he's almost up to 50 or 60 or however many candidates for whether it's governor or for Senate or for state legislature or whatever it might, or Congress, have won. And this is really good news going forward, and it will help slowly but surely reshape the direction of the party. Of course, once these people get to Washington, D.C., will they become, you know, Louis Gohmert, or will they become, you know, Renee Elmers or Nancy Mace or Adam Kinzinger, God forbid? So that's the question. But obviously, the more of them that there are that can stand together and become part of this Freedom Caucus, the better it will be, and slowly the party will be taken back.
I agree, and what's fascinating about the GOP, the traditional Republican Party, is that they are absolutely blind to the reality that energized Republicans are Trump people through and through. And the ones who work hard, the ones who give money, are the ones who are Trump Republicans. But they're not giving to the GOP, you know, the inside the Beltway GOP. I mentioned in a previous podcast about my local primary for United States Representative. Yes. And there were two relatively conservative people running. One was an unknown and one was a guy who had just barely lost 2 years ago. And one of the mailings I got, which I thought was fascinating, was from an organization called Opportunity for All Action Fund, which is a thinly hidden hard left organization funded by the usual suspects. And it was a very interesting, I mean, it's 8.5 by 11 or 9 by 12, thick papered, slick, probably a buck each. And there's a photo in, you know, with storm clouds in the back, says a vote for Frank Pelota means the return of Donald Trump.
Thank you for that. And, you just
you know what I thought? Jesus, really? Hell yes. Can I vote three times? It's New Jersey after all.
Exactly. And what is Bergen County?
Yeah, and and that's another good thing about the Democrats stepping on their dicks. Sorry about that, but I can't not curse. Is that they think that they can push Trumpism into some tiny little far right corner of the political spectrum, and they can't. It's impossible. Far too many Americans like what Donald Trump was saying, and that's not going to change for a very long time.
No, it's funny, and I you know, whoever his handlers were, they prepackaged and pre-digested and focus grouped the expression ultra MAGA, you know, conservative or whatever, and they thought that this was going to be, we've got them now. If we call them that, the GOP is dead in the election. Meanwhile, people are glomming onto it, saying, "Yeah, hell yeah, I'm an ultra MAGA. That's great. Thank you. I appreciate the compliment." So all of this stuff is just blowing up in their heads. I mean, we laugh about it, but it's deadly serious. And if you even just look at this kangaroo court, which is absolutely disgusting to witness, a show trial, Soviet style show trial in America of all places, against President Trump and those and his supporters and people who were at the Capitol January 6th for this phony FBI entrapment sting. It's absolutely, people are turned off by it. Even someone like Rachel Maddow, who is not exactly a Reaganite conservative, she even called this out as a total crock. Yeah, she may disagree and hate Donald Trump personally or politically, but she says this whole thing, trying to paint him as some kind of he wasn't even, she even said the truth was, the fact of the matter was, he was not at the Capitol itself. He was a mile away at a rally, and even when at the rally, he was telling people to behave peacefully and go home. So none of this, all of this is just an absolute, nobody saw it. I mean, nobody was watching the thing, and it was an absolute snooze fest for anybody who did see it. I believe it was the reruns of Young Sheldon beat it like resoundingly. That was the first, and the opening night of this thing was the reruns of Young Sheldon on CBS or wherever it was. Nobody was watching this thing, but it was an insult, and people see
absolutely.
It as an insult.
You're 100% correct. And the reality, let's be realistic here. Americans don't give a crap about this anymore. They're not interested. $6 gasoline, you know, the world is rapidly being set on fire by a bunch of bad actors. And the United States House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack, or whatever the hell they call themselves, is pissing away public money and public time on something that is so, so, so below the radar of most people. And the reality is, nothing's going to happen. What are they going to find? Okay, maybe they will find that Donald Trump was 100% culpable and should be impeached. Okay, great. That's a nice little headline. What else are they going to do? Find a couple of people in contempt of Congress? You know something? I have contempt for Congress, and you know, I'm not alone in the United States. But what is the end result? What are they looking for? And it's simply, you know, in the 24-hour news cycle, they want a couple of hours. That's all they're going to get, and it's going to be forgotten.
I think politically what they were supposedly aiming for was to bring some sort of charges against Donald Trump, as well as a lot of other candidates who may have been at the Capitol, and charge them with, who knows what they want to charge them with, sedition.
But they can't charge. This is not a court.
I realize, but they're trying to just taint them so that they can't run, or trying to sort of sabotage their candidacies. I believe it was, who was it? It was like Liz Cheney even called in the campaign. How disgustingly, she subpoenas the campaign manager of her opponent in Wyoming, who she's going to get her ass kicked, to try to taint her image as somehow being connected with a quote unquote insurrection. This is absolutely disgusting. It's not going to have any effect whatsoever. Now, you said that people don't care about it. What I would say is, in the long term, we should care about what this is and what this what the attempt to do here by the Democrats is, which is a kangaroo court and to persecute one's political enemies once they have the gavel. That should not be just ignored. But yes, to your broader point, CBD, yeah, it's completely irrelevant to the chaos and the disaster that's befalling everybody in this country right now.
Well, look what the FBI just did in Michigan. They arrested a Republican candidate.
Exactly.
You're absolutely right. And I wasn't trying to minimize the political effect of going after political opponents, but it's the disinterest in it on the part of the American people that I find most amusing. They just don't care. But you're absolutely right. It's a dangerous precedent.
Let's take a little bit of a break. We'll be back with the Cut Kid Newsletter Scoops podcast in just a second. And we're back, JJ Sefton with CBD. We were talking about the political persecution of one's enemies, and this is kind of a nice and really chilling segue into our next topic, which are these red flag laws, which our GOP, thank God for them, have graciously bent over, strapped their ankles, and are now instituting red flag laws in the wake of this Uvalde, Texas mass shooting, which is just... You know, this has an effect of you know, you're not, we already have red flag laws on the books, I imagine, to prevent, you know, psychos and criminals and others from obtaining firearms. But be that as it may, the effect of having someone or having the political power for politicians or government to declare however they feel that someone is a danger to themselves or the community to take away their firearms is not just that they would commit a violent act with the gun, but they can just claim out of nowhere, you're a danger to us, so we're going to remove your firearms. Oh, you've attended a Loudoun County school board meeting where you objected to transsexual indoctrination of your children and critical race theory. You're a danger. We're going to take your guns away.
You hit it right on the head. You're absolutely correct. Your red flag laws sound great. And I would support red flag laws that were carefully structured. For instance, looking at juvenile records that have not been adjudicated in a court. I think that's important when an 18-year-old wants to buy guns. But I will absolutely not support any red flag laws in the United States, because though even those carefully structured laws will be abused. And as you said, you know, the red flag law is going to be used obviously on some political opponent of a connected Democrat. Oh my God, he's got guns. He once got into a fight in a bar. Oh yeah, let's take his guns away. You know, that'll be the news cycle for the next 3 or 4 days for this candidate. And he'll look like shit, and he will lose the election. And that sounds ridiculous. You know, I'm sort of constructing a bit of a house of cards here. But 5 years ago, would you have believed that they were going to jail dozens, perhaps hundreds of Americans on trumped up charges when they were simply exercising their First Amendment rights? No, you wouldn't. You would say that's ridiculous. This is America. Won't happen. But it has happened. So any red flag law passed in the United States is going to be abused for political purposes. It's as simple as that.
Well, bingo. There, you hit the nail on the head there, in that in a perfect world where people are above board, ethical, moral, just, and put their politics aside, you know, law enforcement, or whether it's a beat cop or whether it's the attorney general, these people, of course, are going to adjudicate and use these laws fairly and justly and above board, and will never use them or abuse them in order to abuse the system and persecute their political opponents or for political expediency. A fat chance. This is something that I and many others regret deeply, was that in the wake of 9/11, we have the FISA courts established that were supposed to protect America from terrorists to spy on internally use wiretapping and other means to surveil supposed foreign terrorists and prevent them from committing acts of terrorism on our soil. Well, we saw what happened with that. That was totally weaponized to be used against Donald Trump in 2016. And it's still to this day in place, using the courts, illegal wiretapping under the rubric supposedly of national security. And all it's doing is ensnaring one's political enemies. Same can be said. Look what they did with the parents in Loudoun County, Virginia. They protested against critical race theory. They protested against transsexual indoctrination and all this kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, the DOG, at the behest of the White House itself, said, go after them and charge them and call them insurrectionists. Well, if you're going to do that and any of these parents have guns, you now have a red flag law. Well, if you've now taken the step of crossing the line of labeling them as insurrectionists and potential violent terrorists, what's to stop you from grabbing someone's guns just because they stood up at a school board meeting to protest critical race theory? This is really, really, really dangerous. And thank you, GOP, for bending over and allowing this to happen. This is really horrendous.
You know, what's interesting is obviously the ultimate goal is confiscation of guns in the United States. And as the government approaches registration of all weapons, and that's what these background checks are aimed at, is registration. They need to know who has what. So if every transaction has to go through the background check system, well, every transaction will be known to the government. But the reality is that there are hundreds and hundreds of millions of unregistered, unknown guns in the United States. So let's go back to Loudoun County, and one of these parents who gets popped on a red flag law, trumped up charge, and loses his guns. Well, his neighbor's got guns, and his buddy in West Virginia's got guns, and he's going to get guns if he needs guns. So the idea that registration and confiscation can occur in the United States, I think is a dangerous one for the Democrats, because it's that kind of stuff that I think will push normally law-abiding Americans over to, screw you, I'm doing what I want, and I'll build a damn gun on my 3D printer, and I'll do whatever I can to get a gun, and there's nothing you can do about it. That day is coming. I see it in New Jersey. New Jersey made normal capacity magazines illegal. So the largest magazine that one can possess in the state of New Jersey is 10 rounds. Now, I'm not describing myself, but I am aware of at least one or two or 812 people who did not destroy or ship out of the state their large capacity, and that's in quotes, large capacity magazines. They put them behind some fiberboard in the basement, or it's up in the, they're up in the attic. And these are law-abiding people who wouldn't dream of breaking the law, yet they've been forced to by this ridiculous overreach by government. And that's going to happen more and more and more.
As an aside, there was an article today that someone, I think it was a teenager in New Zealand, another shining example of democracy gone nuts, was arrested and is going to be charged because he 3D printed he 3D printed either a gun, or he 3D printed a high capacity magazine. I forget which, but New Zealand is lost, but so is Australia and England for that matter. But moving beyond just guns for a moment, let's look at red flag laws on another level and say, what's to prevent the government, forget about confiscating guns, but if you have the wrong political bent, shall we say, from confiscating and taking your children from you because you're a danger to them because you refuse to give them transsexual surgery, or you found out that a teacher was advising them to, or a doctor was going to, was going to give them puberty blockers, and you objected to it, then all of a sudden the state labels you as an unfit parent, and they remove your children from your home. This is, all of these things are, this is dystopian in thinking about it, but we have to think about it. We have to confront it because we have people who have this will to power and will stop now at nothing to do this. I mean, they will use everything legal, illegal, or otherwise, constitutional, unconstitutional, call it what you will, in order to get their way, whether it's guns, whether it's your children, whether it's your freedom in general. So this is really, we are in dangerous times.
That speaks to the idea that the country is lost And the last best hope of America is in the states. And strong governors who push back against federal government overreach are going to save America. And, you know, it makes a fair amount of sense. You look at Florida and you look at Texas. Of course, Abbott is following DeSantis every yes. single move. But, you know, laws that say that, you know, that giving puberty blockers isn't such a great idea. And maybe the state should look at parents who allow that. That's a fine, fine thing. What will happen when the federal government comes in and says, whoops, you can't do that? Well, the state will say, screw you. And that's where the 10th Amendment comes in. And that's where a constitutional crisis will arise. And who knows what happens then?
It's funny because I think the whole COVID nonsense, especially and the open borders insanity has exposed the hypocrisy or the I guess that's the best word for it of the left. Insofar as, you know, we claim, look at what's going on with the potential decision to overturn Roe versus Wade. We've always claimed and it was always held that abortion was legal, but it was only legal in certain states that wanted it. What Roe versus Wade did was force it upon states that did not want, that had laws against abortion. So on the one hand, when people claim that they sanctuary cities, for example, it's completely unconstitutional. It's ridiculous. Well, all of a sudden, states and cities hide behind the 9th and 10th Amendments when just not, you know, however long before, not maybe months or weeks before, they would be railing against any states that invoked the 9th and 10th Amendment to sort of nullify what they felt was unconstitutional federal laws. It's just completely schizophrenic. There was the word I was looking for. It's hypocritical and it's schizophrenic in the extreme. And so this can't go on and it won't go on. So
that's an interesting question. Should sanctuary cities and states be allowed to act against the wishes of the federal government? I think it's reasonable for California to say that illegal immigrants in the state of California should not be considered illegal. The bigger question, however, is can the federal government step in and say, okay, that's fine. We're not going to give you any money. And the answer to that, I think, is also yes. The 10th Amendment is a very, very important thing. The problem with these sanctuary cities and states is that they want it both ways, as you just pointed out. They want to declare sanctuary states, but they also want the largesse coming out of Washington. And they can't have it both ways.
Right, which is de facto imposing their will on the rest of the country. So
exactly.
It's like the same thing we were talking about or when Trump repealed the salt tax, not sodium chloride, but I forget what the acronym of SALT, which is basically allowing blue state residents to write off their federal tax returns. So, and it basically made all these profligate and insane spending programs in blue states and blue cities put on the tab of people in other states who normally would never go for that. So by disallowing that, all of a sudden it forced them to pay for it, for blue residents to pay for the programs and the profligate spending of their governors and state legislatures. And of course, they screamed bloody murder about that. But again, it brings up this conflict and between federalism, non-federalism, the 9th and 10th Amendments only when we want it, so to speak. And it illustrates the fact that the left will either use the Constitution as both a shield and a cudgel in order to get its way.
Of course. And it's power politics. They do it better than the Republican Party. And they always will, because they learned at the knee of Marx and Engels and Lenin and Stalin and Beria. Increasingly.
Well, you know, we have a federal government, though, that is really the entire federal government, if you really want to get down to brass tacks, is essentially unconstitutional. But it was imposed on us with the New Deal. And someone like a President Eisenhower, you know, great man though he was, and everybody liked Ike, and thank you for liberating Europe and everything, and your generalship and the booming time of the 1950s and warning us, rightly so, against the military-industrial complex. But what did Ike do to reverse the New Deal? He did nothing. He basically, by not doing anything, he let it metastasize. And he and the rest of the Republican Party, this was sort of their mantra going forward, was that they could use you know, they're just better managers. They don't mind big government. They're just better managers. And we'll give you a tax cut and a rate cut here and there. But the federal government really does, in a way, know best and can handle things. But they didn't realize, or maybe they did realize it and they didn't care, that it can grow into a beast that could literally squash the freedoms of individual Americans and, of course, the states. So this is kind of the be all and end all is really devolving power, again, away from the federal government and back towards the states and back towards the people, which I believe that was written into the Ninth and Tenth Amendments. All rights that are not deemed to be for the federal government shall be assumed
reserved
to be
for the states. Yeah,
reserved the states and the individuals. But this is where the fist is in the glove of the federal government. This is where it gets much, if not all, of its power is in these unelected bureaucrats that produce edicts and laws and regulations. I should say not even laws, but regulations that have the power and the force of law, and you can't do anything about it because you can't vote the EPA out of office every 4 years or every 6 years. The EPA is there forever, as is the IRS and every other one of these alphabet soup agencies. They are there for the duration unless something drastically changes where they are no more, or where they literally have their power cut from them. And won't that be a merry time of misrule? Please God.
And it'll get even worse, too, because as, you know, this new world order becomes more and more popular among the glitterati in Washington, we will get deference to world organizations instead of deference to the federal government. You know, I look at what's going on in England right now. They're trying to deport a bunch of illegal immigrants, gate crashers. I mean, why do we call them immigrants? They're not immigrants. They're gate crashers. They're burglars. They're
invaders,
breaking into our countries. And England or the United Kingdom is bound by European courts, by European court decisions. And their original desire to deport something like 400 people, it's dropped down to, I think, 7. And they had to hold the plane on the runway to wait for some ridiculous court to make some decision. And that's what's going to happen more and more. And, you know, we see it with, you know, Soros is a big fan of that. Trying to level the playing field for Soros means taking the, you know, the top heavy government of the rest of the world and plopping it right down on top of the United States. And
yeah, right. It's also the big one coming up. And I think it was stopped temporarily was the attempt to cede control of our healthcare system to the World Health Organization. That was supposedly going to go forward, and somehow, I don't know if it got stopped in Congress or it got stopped in a lawsuit or just whatever. It was somehow it got derailed, but that doesn't mean they're not going to try again, because that's a huge, you know, my God, if the World Health Organization controls our healthcare system, it's bad enough that the U.S. government controls it via Obamacare. But I mean, if now a foreign entity out of Turtle Bay or from Geneva or Brussels or wherever the hell else controls it, our freedom, we're done. I mean, there's no, you know, they could dictate almost anything they want to us. And that is completely unacceptable. And this, of course, yes, is Soros's wet dream, as well as what's his name, Klaus Schwab and Hans-Jörg Wyss and Fink from BlackRock, who is now still going after our guns in a back doorway via, you know, not giving loans or not giving funding to companies that do not come out against Second Amendment rights and a bunch of other rights. So,
well, you know, it's very interesting, though, and this goes back to the Ninth and Tenth Amendments and the last great hope of the United States being in the states. I think that Texas passed a law that they're not going to do any business with banks that penalize gun manufacturers, things like that.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, I think it was B of A, it might have been Chase, I'm not sure which. All of a sudden, they said, "Oh wait, sorry, we'll change now, because they need that business, they want that business." And just like what DeSantis did against Disney, if you push back, you will win.
That is definitely the lesson, and it will reside in the governors, and hopefully we can take as many state houses as possible. Again, it's everybody having the backbone of a DeSantis, and to a certain lesser extent Abbott, but I think at least Abbott sees the writing on the wall, and he is, well, no pun intended, he's standing up to this to this nonsense, and I hope it certainly it certainly carries over to all the other Republican governors. Unfortunately, we had one. We thought Kristi Noem was going to be that kind of a superstar, but she caved very early to the transgender madness and, you know, the female athletes in female uniforms or whatever. And she caved to that. And now all of a sudden she backtracked on that because she saw she faced a political shitstorm up in North Dakota. But yeah, it's definitely building. There is definitely a groundswell of all of these things building against the federal government, especially when the federal government is imposing things that are absolutely antithetical to common sense, to one's financial security, and to one's spirituality in the sense of abortions, transsexual and homosexual indoctrination, and so on and so forth. Let's take a little bit of a break. Cut Jib Newsletter speaks. Back in a flash. And we are back with the final segment with CBD. This is J.J. Sefton at the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast, and we're going to broaden the scope internationally. We have Sponge Brain Shits Pants off to the Middle East to both, strong arm Israel into surrendering and driving itself into the sea, as well as bending over for the Iranians and trying to give them the bomb as soon as possible. This is really a lot of things going on, especially in Iran, in the wake of Israel's targeting of a number of people, including, and I don't know the guy's name, a key Quds force or, you know, Iran Revolutionary Guard cadre who got whacked in a drive-by shooting. And so there's warning signs to Israeli citizens to be on the guard. I think in Turkey they literally had Israel arranged flights for tourists from Israel to come back as soon as possible because they were supposedly being targeted. But yeah, Iran is a dangerous situation. And as that country collapses in on itself, its economy is really in the toilet. They're pell mell still racing to develop their first nuclear bomb.
Well, but the thing is that that their economy was just tossed a huge lifeline, you know, with petroleum at $130 a barrel, whatever they can get out onto the world market, which is a significant amount, because let's face it, oil is fungible. You know, they'll be able to sell to somebody even at a discount. They're making $110, $120 a barrel, and that's their lifeline. And thank you, Joe Biden, because it's Joe Biden, who has handed the Iranian regime money to survive. But let's get back to Biden's little trip to the Middle East. Instead of being pro-Israeli, he is going to be very carefully neutral. He's going to visit Israel, and he's also going to visit the Palestinian territories or the West Bank or whatever they described it as. And that gives the cachet of being a country to these fucking 7th century savages who revel in murder and bathe in the blood of their victims. And Biden is going to make them more important on the world stage, just as every Democrat president in the last 40 years has done. And it's disgusting. These people are savages. They live in shitty little villages and towns on the West Bank and in Gaza that all they do is talk about the murder of Israelis and the destruction of the state of Israel. And he is legitimizing it by visiting them.
The other thing he's doing, from what I understand, is allowing them to establish some sort of a quote unquote capital in Jerusalem or in some office space. I don't know. I forgot what.
Some pushback. He wanted to set up an American quasi diplomatic office in East Jerusalem. And I'm not 100% sure of what the current status of that is. Israel obviously has a say over that, and they said no. So whether he goes against the wishes of the Israeli government and does it anyway is going to be a very interesting question, because he can't, and that will provoke a diplomatic incident appropriately.
You know, and on a positive note, at least to counter all this, his idiocy and madness, the you know, there's been a lot of diplomatic moves and exchanging of missions and normalization of relations between both Bahrain and the Emirates and the State of Israel. And there's been much talk, obviously, now with Iran, you know, closer and closer to getting a nuclear weapon. Even there's still scuttlebutt that perhaps the Saudis may even join the Abraham Accords and recognize the State of Israel. Whether that happens or doesn't happen, you got to believe that definitely under the radar, there is a hell of a lot of cooperation between Israel, the Saudis, and what Saudis are part of what's known as the Gulf Cooperation Council of all the states that are on the other side of the Gulf. I mean, the blood feud between them, between the Shiites and the Sunnis, goes way, way back to the point of ridiculousness, where they call the Gulf the Arabian Gulf and the Iranians call it the Persian Gulf. So that's just a wee bit of an indicator of the enmity between those states. But of course, enemy of my enemy is my friend. And now Israel does not necessarily have to worry about refueling tankers on potential long flights to bomb Iranian nuclear facilities. They can just have a forward base right across the Gulf, hop, skip, and a jump, and there it is. They take out whatever nuke facilities they have to, if and when they really are under the gun and there is no other alternative. And Israel has promised literally for decades that there is no way that they are ever going to allow Iran to get an atomic bomb. And they are perhaps, I don't know, months, weeks away now from getting it. So this is the situation there is really heating up. I mean, I'm sort of heartened by the fact that I think that the Saudis and the Emiratis and the Bahrainis and the Omanis are going to be, for lack of a better word, aligned with the Israelis against Iran in thwarting them getting this bomb.
Well, they certainly are united in their fear of an Iranian, of a Persian bomb. But let's get back to Israel's military capacity and capability. Yes, Israel can degrade the Iranian nuclear programs. The problem is that even if they are allowed to land and refuel in Saudi Arabia, and those are under the table negotiations, obviously not public, because Saudi Arabia doesn't want to be seen as helping the Jewish state. But even if they do that, Israel is a significant regional power, but they don't have what it takes to end the threat without significant involvement with not just bombers. My guess is that they'll have to use missiles, they'll use bombers, they might have to use troops on the ground, and that is a much, much messier and potentially catastrophic way of attacking the Iranian nuclear program. The United States could do it with much, much less damage to civilians, let's say in Iran, and much less of a threat to the world order. And I blame Biden and his anti-Semitic handlers in the White House and the West Wing for this decision. And as for the Iranian nuclear program, they have 33 kilograms of 60% uranium-235, which is a lot. They need about 90% purity to have weapons-grade uranium. And to go from 60 to 90% apparently is much, much easier than to go from, you know, the half percent in mined uranium to 60%. So they've done the vast majority of the work necessary to produce weapons-grade uranium. And once again, you can blame Joe Biden for the possible destruction of city or cities in the Middle East. It is squarely in his lap, you know, shit-covered as it may be. But at least there are no mean tweets.
Yes, there are no more mean tweets, and you know, everybody gets two scoops of Ben and Jerry's Rachel Corey Crunch for their troubles. I've got to believe, though, that a lot of things are going on, like as I mentioned at the top of the segment, the assassination of key leaders and key scientists. I think a number of them have been reportedly poisoned. So that also is something to be that'll sort of delay the onset of this bomb and the thing from being weaponized. You also have to believe that they're ramping up those kind of clandestine operations as well. Be nice if the Israelis can smuggle in the horrible assault rifles. You know, they can confiscate it from us and ship it to the Iranian people, but or at least give them their own weapons. As I said, the Iranian economy. I mean, the average Iranian, I think, does feel the pinch. They're in trouble. The mullahs, of course, are rolling in dough and rolling in whatever the hell else that they roll in. But the average Iranian is, you know, they're not living so great. Maybe they're getting some welfare checks or some renewed welfare checks or whatever they're getting from the government, from our pockets, you know, from the American taxpayer, thanks to Biden. But their society is really, you know, the young people there are fed up. They're just they're totally at their wit's end with the mullahs. Will a potential war with the Israelis spark a sense of patriotism to fight for this regime? Who knows? It's got to be kind of handled delicately. I imagine hopefully the Israelis have the horse sense to figure this kind of thing out. And if it does come to an actual all out air attack and missile attack and so on and so forth, yeah, that's something that's not going to be very pretty. But shifting gears, if we can, it's while that's going on, we still have the situation with the Red Chinese in Taiwan.
Ah, what a wonderful situation that is. So the question is, does the Chinese government have the will to attempt to take Taiwan? I don't think they do. I think that there are enough internal problems, and there are significant internal problems. You know, they're locking down cities of 10 million people. That doesn't suggest a vibrant internal situation. Do they want Taiwan? Absolutely. Can they take Taiwan without destroying much of the technological capacity of Taiwan? And I don't know about that. I think that the Chinese are looking at the fiasco in Ukraine and thinking, well, gee, you know, the Russian army stinks. How's our army? They sure have a lot of people. Are they well trained? Can they launch an amphibious operation against a technologically superior state in Taiwan? I don't know. It's hopefully we'll never find out, but
yeah, we may find out sooner than later, because their rhetoric is really through the roof coming from Taiwan, especially against Biden. And, you know, when they insult Biden, I can't honestly say that I can disagree with them, but that's another story. As far as, you know, analyzing the PLA and their military capabilities, I think their strategic and their military doctrine, because for many, many years they were a lesser, you know, state or lesser ally of the Soviet Union, I think they have an identical military doctrine, at least, or very close. It's a very close kissing cousin to them, just as we have the same sort of military doctrine with Western Europe and the Brits and with NATO, mostly because we developed it in the wake of World War II and in the Cold War. So that's one aspect of it. So you got to wonder about their generalship. Number two, China and the Chinese military and the Chinese government, I mean, you think we have corruption here. They are corrupt out the wazoo there. And we don't see it because obviously it's hidden under, you know, it's a tyrannical totalitarian regime. And our own press doesn't really do much reporting. But there are inklings from investigative reporters and from defectors from China that they are really corrupt. And you got to wonder about the capability of their weapon systems, about their soldiers, and about a whole panoply of things. And I always quip that I say that if their military hardware is as good as the drywall and the cat food that we get from them, you know, I don't think we have that much necessarily to worry about. Now, that said, look, I mean, they're nothing to be, you can't just dismiss them out of hand. They will try something. And that's the whole thing. They, as you said, CBD, they do want Taiwan. They want Taiwan primarily because they look at it as a rogue state, but also from an economic standpoint, they have the chip manufacturing plants over there. That is really sort of the jewel in the crown of Taiwan. And if there is an invasion, if they do degrade it, if they do bomb the hell out of Taipei or the rest of the island, those factories are either going to be destroyed, or, you know, in an act of sabotage, or, you know, sort of a scorched earth. I wouldn't put it past the Taiwanese to blow up their own factories in order to deny the Red Chinese from getting access to them. And then you'll just have, okay, you'll have a nice island and you can claim your territory, but, you know, what good is it?
That's a very, very good point. Taking Taiwan scorched earth just isn't going to do it for the Red Chinese, but they might do it anyway, just to have it. And what will they lose in the long run? Probably not much. They can rebuild those factories, certainly, and they will have Taiwan. Will it take 10 years, 20 years? Sure. I know that their domestic chip making is several generations behind the West, but who knows what's going on in their heads. And by the way, you know, they have millions of men under arms. So, you know, 50% attrition, they send a million paratroopers to Taiwan. Okay, half of them die before they hit the ground, but they still got 500,000 men on the island. And they'll win.
Well, that is
they
the lesson.
Will win is the question.
Right. That's also, I mean, that's what happened to in World War II to the Luftwaffe when the paratroopers invaded Crete. They got massacred and slaughtered. But at the end of the day, they succeeded in capturing the island from the British. They never performed another airborne operation again for the rest of the war, but they got Crete. And that was that. But going back to the Chinese, from a social and a societal standpoint, yes, they're locking down all these cities supposedly because of a COVID outbreak, because they want zero COVID. But it's more than that. There's a political aspect to this that I think is really driving it. There's a lot of unrest that we don't know about it with regular Chinese citizenry. The one child policy is a disaster. Their birth rate is literally, they're heading in towards negative, you know, within the next, whatever it is, 50, 60, 70 years, they're going to have a shortage of women and a shortage of population. And they are an aging society as well. Their real estate markets, their economy is on a huge bubble that is supposedly that has the potential to crash very soon. So this whole lockdown, especially of cities that make up the bulk of their economy, like I believe Shanghai, this is not good for their economy. So this may force them in a way either to back down or lash out one way or the other sooner or later. And the longer that we have Mr. Biden and his puppet masters pulling the strings, and they see that he's a completely feckless moron, and basically he's in their pockets as well. Let's face it, the grift is strong with this guy. They've gotten money from the Red Chinese, as many, not just to put the blame on Biden, but so many of our politicians are in bed with them that it's disgusting. So they may just attack while the going is good, before a President DeSantis or whomever, please God, gets back in the White House, if there is an America left in 2 years to begin with.
Do you believe that Joe Biden and his handlers would come to the defense of Taiwan if the communist Chinese attack?
You know, there are two schools of thought to this. One is, no, they won't do it. They'll just surrender with an angry letter to the New York Times or the UN. Or this is even more dangerous. Just to prove everybody wrong that Joe Biden's a macho man, he might actually declare war on the Red Chinese. I mean, either way, it's insanity. We are in a pickle that is just nuts. He might just lash out because that's what he does. He might get angry and say, oh, they think I'm weak. They think I'm going to surrender to the Red Chinese. I'll show them. And then we'd really be, you know, we would really be in a mess if that were to happen. And it's such a classic case of, as we've seen over and over again in history, of countries blundering themselves into predicaments that they never thought would happen. World War I is a good case in point, to a somewhat lesser extent, but still a kind of a blunder, World War II.
Hard to argue that. My guess is that he would not come to the aid of Taiwan.
I believe you're right. And that is just what a tragedy that is. Then again, you know, maybe as we've said, in war, it's the side that makes the fewest mistakes that will win. But the Chinese, yeah, they may take Taiwan, they may destroy Taiwan in their effort to take it. But at the end of the day, they may even, who knows what will happen to their government. Is there a potential for them to collapse like the Soviet Union did? Maybe, to a lesser extent, because they have such an overpowering totalitarian control on society. But anything is possible. You never know. It could be.
I think that the communist Chinese government is radically different than any other totalitarian government in history because of its total and complete control over its population via the internet and via obtrusive technology. They know everything about everybody. And I think that's a very, very different thing.
Yeah, they're like they're sort of like East Germany, but with supercomputers. So because East Germany had file cards on every citizen, and every citizen was snitching on every other citizen, you know, so it was ridiculous. I think Simon Wiesenthal even said that the Stasi was even more of a danger to its population in a way than the Gestapo was, because you couldn't trust anybody. Because everybody was potentially an agent. It was ridiculous. So the Red Chinese multiplied that by, you know, whatever, with electronic surveillance and all these other things. But again, you know, the bigger they come, the harder they fall. But, you know, if the Red Chinese do fall, they're not going to fall without falling on all of us.
what a wonderful thing to think about. So let's wrap it up. But before we do, yes, I want to bring up one thing that happened in the news. There's a popular writer named James Patterson. I've never read any of his books, but apparently he's quite popular, quite successful. And he made a reasonable point that white men trying to publish in film and theater and TV and the traditional publishing industries are having a very, very difficult time of it simply because of their sex and color. And I think it's a reasonable point, and you can prove it to yourself by looking at the top 10 New York Times bestsellers and everything that's being pimped by Amazon Books. It seems like 99% of the books that they are pushing are written by women, women of color, lesbians, transsexuals, you know, dog bangers. Who the hell knows? And as I said, Patterson made a reasonable point. I don't think it's debatable. And he was eviscerated, of course. And quite predictably, he backed down. And once again, the lesson is to everybody on Earth, never, ever back down, because it won't work.
No, as soon as you do that, you are opening yourself up to you're dead. You're totally dead. And someone like a James Patterson or a J.K. Rowling, for example, she backed down as well in her the fight with the transsexual insanity. These people, as we stated during the break, it's like it's amazing. They have literally millions and tens of millions of dollars worth of what's known as of FU money. And they could basically tell the entire world to F off and do whatever the hell they want. And so for them to apologize, it just makes, you know, I don't know. It makes no sense. Maybe they fear that they're not going to get a publishing gig anymore. But who cares? I mean, you've already established your name. If you were to even if James Patterson were to lose his publishing gig from whoever his publisher is, you know, he could self-publish, and I'm sure he would sell at least his name is so well known. He'd still make a shit ton of money. Absolutely. Off of his books. So, and the same thing with J.K. Rowling. But the fact that they don't do that, and then there's what's his name, the coach of the Washington Redskins, who made comments that truly said the January 6th Capitol riot, or really the false flag operation of the FBI, was basically, you know, it was nothing. It was sort of I don't have his exact words, but it was basically a nothing burger. And he got ripped to shreds, and he was forced to apologize, and he shouldn't have apologized. But it is you the minute you do that, you're dead, because they will never back down. They'll destroy you. They'll use you as their perpetual whipping boy, and you'll have to apologize and apologize and apologize and apologize forever. And then
you'll be deplatformed anyway. So the apology means nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what is the point?
Yeah. It is. By the way, before we go, I have to bring this one up too. So the World Health Organization is going to rename the monkeypox virus to avoid discrimination. And I swear to God, I'm not making this up.
No, I saw that.
Yeah. The World Health Organization has said it will rename monkeypox to avoid discrimination and stigmatization as the virus continues to spread among people in an unprecedented global outbreak of the disease. Something like a total of 1,500 cases across the world. Yeah. Folks, don't worry about monkeypox or whatever they're going to call it. But the idea that the name monkeypox is in any way stigmatizing to anything except for monkeys is ridiculous.
Yeah, well, they got an angry letter from Dr. Zayas and Zira and Cornelius from Ape City saying, "How dare you do that? I will sick General Urko on you, and that'll be that." I mean, it's ridiculous. Monkey? Why is it a monkeypox? What is a monkey? It's a monkey.
Well, because
are they trying to relate monkeys?
A lot of monkeys in Africa. And, but there's a lot of monkeypox in Africa too. So I don't understand the problem.
Meanwhile, this thing is spread almost exclusively through homosexual anal sex, if I could say that on the air without being, you know, excoriated. But I don't see any calls from Dr. Fauci or anybody to put diapers or chastity belts on the rectal areas of gay men, do we? Or to to lock them up in internment camps. I guess that would be oh my God, that would be the end of it, the be all and end all. So we'll all have to oh God, it's a crazy world we're in. It's a madhouse, speaking of Planet of the Apes, to quote Charlton Heston. Anyway, my friend, that is it for us. For CBD, this is JJ Sefton for the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast. Just as a note, CBD is going on vacation. We're going to take a little bit of a break for a week. We'll be back around the week of the 27th. Keep the cards and letters coming. Hit the tip jar. Do the thing. And we'll see you on the next one.
Thanks for listening, folks.